Hello, welcome to MotoGPOD, the podcast about motorcycle road racing. I'm Bob Hayes, your host, and today is Friday, October 7th, 2005. This is the 24th episode of MotoGPOD. Thank you very much for downloading it. Today, we've got a little bit of news, another quick look at the MotoGP World Championship standings in the battle for second place, and a few comments about team orders and whether they're good, bad, or just plain ugly. But before we get to all of that, I have a favor to ask of my international audience. I'm curious about MotoGP coverage in Spain, particularly in Spain, especially when you compare it to Formula One. Any information that anyone can give me would be helpful, whether it's maybe the amount of newspaper or magazine coverage for MotoGP compared to Formula One, or hard numbers like television ratings, or whatever you've got. I'd appreciate it a lot. Just send me an email to motogpod@motogpod.com. I'm kind of curious about this sort of stuff for any country, so you know, feel free to let me know whatever's happening in your part of the world. But like I said, I'm sort of particularly interested in Spain right now because of their long history of being such huge motorcycle racing fans. But now that Fernando Alonso has won the Formula One championship, and we're seeing situations like Telefónica Movistar take their sponsorship away from MotoGP and move to Formula One, I'm kind of wondering how that's affecting general sort of MotoGP and Formula One coverage in Spain. You know, are you starting to see things shift towards Formula One being more popular or what have you? So please, like I say, let me know. I know there's a few listeners in Spain, so I'd really like to hear from you. Okay, not a whole lot more introduction here. Let's just get on with the show. Okay, let's take a look at some of the things that have been in the news about MotoGP lately. That's a few interesting stories that I found. First of all, I should preface this first story by telling you that it's basically old news, and it's not going to happen. But it was so interesting that I wanted to pass it along anyway, you know, just for the sake of posterity, if nothing else. Okay, apparently the Kawasaki Racing Team had a short list of possible riders to substitute at Phillip Island for the injured Olivier Jacques, who, as you know, is substituting for the injured Alex Hoffman on the Kawasaki team. And on this list were both Tommy and Roger Hayden, brothers of Nicky Hayden. Now, I mean, how cool would that be to see one of them riding in a MotoGP race alongside Nicky Hayden? You know, brothers going from America to MotoGP, that'd be cool. The likely choice of the two probably would be Roger, because Tommy has an injury of his own that he's trying to deal with. However, I'm sure that there were other riders on this list, so it's not like it was a done deal to begin with or anything like that, that Roger or Tommy would come to MotoGP. And like I said, all of it's a moot point now, because Kawasaki says that Jacques will be racing at Phillip Island after all. He's recovering from his injuries, and that's good for Jacques, and maybe unfortunate for Roger or Tommy Hayden or whoever else might have gotten that shot. In any case, it's not like you'd see a whole lot of Nicky Hayden battling with a brother due to the fact that the Kawasaki just really isn't up to snuff on the being as fast as the Honda, not to mention the fact that neither Tommy nor Roger would really have had a lot of time to practice on the MotoGP machine compared to their normal AMA Supersport and Superstock Kawasakis. So, you know, it takes a lot of time to adjust to these different motorcycles and everything, so they just, you know, it wouldn't have been like a battle for the lead between two brothers. But it's a very interesting little news item anyways, and it might say something about Roger Hayden's future, possibly Tommy's future. You just never know. So we'll have to wait and see on that. Also in the news, Camel Honda has confirmed that World Superbike rider Chris Vermeulen will substitute for Troy Bayliss at Phillip Island. If you remember, I reported this a few episodes ago when we were talking about Shane Byrne riding for Bayliss at Sepang in LaSalle. Shane's not coming back for Phillip Island, but this isn't because Camel Honda was unhappy with his performance. This was planned quite a long time ago. Shane had a two-race deal for Sepang in Qatar. Now, whether or not Camel Honda is happy or unhappy with Shaky's performance is a different matter. He didn't exactly set the world on fire, but on the other hand, he didn't crash either, and that is a big plus when you first go out there, you know, don't crash. So, we'll see about Shane, what happens with him. Haven't had a lot of news from him lately. Troy Bayliss had surgery on that injury to his left wrist about 3.5 weeks ago in Australia. 18 screws were inserted into his wrist. He returned to Europe and immediately began his rehabilitation process. Vermeulen will wrap up his World Superbike Series this Sunday, October 9th, riding for the Winston Tenkata Honda team. Vermeulen is currently second in the World Superbike Championship, with no chance of catching Superbike champ Troy Courser, or, on the other hand, of being caught by third-place Nori Yukahaga. So, then, the following weekend after that, Vermeulen is going to ride an RC211V for the first time, as temporary teammate to Alex Barros. Vermeulen says about this, "I'm really excited about the opportunity to ride Honda's RC211V. I had a test scheduled for the end of last season, but had to miss that because of an injury, so I'm really happy that this chance has come round again. I've made no secret of the fact that MotoGP is where I want to go with my career, and Honda has the best bike in the championship. But to be honest, I'm trying not to think about this ride too much. I've got more races in the World Superbike Championship for the Winston Tenkate Honda team. That's my job, and that's what I'll be focusing on 100%. Right now, the GP ride is a special end-of-season bonus for me." All right. Fair dinkum there, Chris Vermeulen. It's a very good opportunity for him. I hope he does well. It'll be real interesting to see how he does, particularly as an Australian racing at Phillip Island in Australia. He should know the track, but is that going to translate into enough of an advantage to overcome the fact that he doesn't know the RC211B? Only time will tell on that. We'll find out in a couple weeks. Well, actually about a week and a half. Speaking of World Superbike, if you get a chance to check out the last round this weekend at Magny-Cours, it should be a real interesting race. The pressure is off Troy Courser now that he's locked up the championship, so he might be able to get away from that kind of conservative style of racing that he's been doing. The last two race weekends at Imola and Lausitz were amazing, especially Lausitz. Lausitz was two very enjoyable races. I don't talk a whole lot about World Superbike, and to be honest, I think that sometimes the racing isn't quite as exciting as MotoGP, but when it's hot, it's hot. It's good stuff. And one last item. RoadRacingWorld.com is reporting that Curtis Roberts, son of Kenny Roberts Sr. and brother to Kenny Roberts Jr., will return to MotoGP for the last round in Valencia, riding a Proton KR with a V5 engine, the same motorcycle that Team KR had last year. If we remember, Team KR had a small issue with KTM, where all of a sudden KTM pulled the plug on the engine supply for the V4 that Team KR had been running up till Brno here this past August. So it'll be good to see Curtis Roberts there. The bike probably won't be all that competitive. They had, they brought it back out for the Brno race, and they didn't make the flyaways because of the expenses, but they have to get some races in to secure their place in MotoGP for next year. So this is a good sign that Team KR will be coming back. Oh, and one more last little item. The mini-series Long Way Round with Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman, riding the BMWs from the UK to New York City, but going east, taking the long way around. It's coming out on DVD in the United States in December. It's an awesome show. I managed to watch it when it was on Bravo Channel, I do believe it was. It's not really so much about motorcycles, but they are riding motorcycles, so it's kind of connected, and Ewan McGregor is a huge fan. In fact, he narrated the Faster movie. And it's a very entertaining series. So that would make an excellent stocking stuffer, something for you guys to ask your significant others about, you listeners out there, and something to look forward to. All right, let's take another look at the standings. We did this just a little while ago, but the Qatar Grand Prix really shook things up kind of a little bit, and the battle for second place is very close, with five riders within 11 points of each other in trying to get second spot there. After Qatar, Valentino Rossi, has amassed 306 points for the year. He's unbeatable, he has won the championship, he's locked it up quite a while ago, but that is the highest amount ever achieved by a Yamaha rider in a single season, which beats Rossi's previous record for Yamaha of 304 points last year in 2004. But it's still 51 points short of the 357 points that he got riding for Honda in 2003. That number is the highest for any one rider in any class in a single season, and what's more, Rossi did it in 16 races, one less than he's going to have this year. So while Rossi will probably, most likely, beat that score of 357 points this year, there will be that little asterisk about 17 races instead of 16. But no matter what, it's quite an achievement. It's an amazing amount. And in any case, we're not really talking about Rossi here. Getting a little sidetracked. He's already locked up the championship. We know he's the number one rider this year. We were talking about second place and who has a shot at it. So, after his DNF in Qatar, Max Biaggi is still second place in the championship, but only just. He has 159 points, putting him just 2 points ahead of third place Marco Melandri. So, old Max isn't exactly in the comfiest, safe spot in the world. He placed 7th in Australia last year, so he needs to improve on that performance or he's going to slip down the standings. So we'll see how he does come Phillip Island. Marco Melandri, as I just said, is in 3rd place on 157 points. His 2nd place finish in Qatar moved him from 5th to 2nd. He hasn't finished at his last two races in Australia, in both in the MotoGP class, but he did win the race in 2002 on a 250. So he can do well here. It's just a question of can he do well on a MotoGP bike. But this year, Marco's quite a bit different rider than he was last year. So I'm really not too sure what to expect of him, but I have a hunch that he'll do real well. Or crash. Colin Edwards remains in fourth place in the standings. Now he's 7 points back from Biaggi on 152 points. His fourth place finish at Qatar helped, well, actually it just helped keep him stable, but those kind of numbers are not going to see him climb in the standings unless we see a big shake-up of the field ahead of him. Of course, that is a possibility. Riders that are farther down the standings, like Carlos Checa and Sete Gibernau, could make the podium in those remaining races, but unless they do that every race, and Colin Edwards continues coming in fourth, they don't have nearly the chance to pick up second or third, and that would eventually actually help Colin Edwards. But, like I said, because they'd be shaking things up by doing that, so Colin would move up, the other people would move up too, but Marco Melandri and Max Biaggi would move down. Okay, currently in fifth place in the championship, Nicky Hayden, whose third place finish in Qatar moved him up from sixth place. Nicky's got 150 points. He's 9 points back from second place. And again, depending on how the riders ahead of him perform at the last three races, Nicky has a strong numerical chance to pick up second overall. Or, well, definitely to move up, at least beyond fifth. He's been hovering around fifth place in the standings for the last few rounds. But he might do well in the final three races of this season. In 2004, he came in sixth at Phillip Island, but he was he also had to recover from a very poor qualifying position from 14th on the grid, and he was riding with an injury. So, you know, that sixth place finish combined with his 2003 third place finish, which was his first real, in quotes, podium in MotoGP, really leads me to believe that Nicky Hayden might do well this year at Phillip Island. He's always been fairly comfortable there. Turkey and Valencia, going to be a different matter. Not sure what to expect on that, but I don't really want to start talking about those race previews yet. We're going to save those for future episodes, along with our official Phillip Island race preview, which will be coming up next Friday. And Loris Capirossi fell to sixth place in the championship after Qatar. His string of high points finishes at Brno, Motegi, and Sepang just vaulted him to third place in the standings right before the Qatar race. But that 10th place finish that he had at Qatar knocked him back down to sixth, even though it was an admirable achievement considering his off-track excursion and general all-around tire problems and unfriendliness of the track. He finished third at Phillip Island in 2004, on the Ducati, so who knows, maybe he can duplicate that result or even better it, which will definitely have an effect, depending upon where the other riders land. And it's easy enough to say that any of these riders has a good chance to get up to second. They do, numerically. Like I said, you know, 11 points is covering these guys. But it's very difficult to try to make any kind of predictions, because how well any single rider does all depends so much on what the other four riders do, not to mention Rossi and the whole rest of the field. But one thing I can say with certainty is that the fact that we have five riders competing so closely for second place really shows the quality of the racing this year. Rossi is such a huge phenomenon and such a almost superhuman rider that you kind of have to look at things without him in the mix, you know, sort of remove him out of the mix as kind of an anomaly. And when you do that, you see that all of these guys are just fantastic racers, and they're just unfortunate enough to be racing against Rossi, who, like I said, is proving to be almost superhuman. Some of the stuff in this segment deals with the results of the 125cc race in Qatar, and I'll be talking about who wins and all that kind of thing. So if you haven't watched the LaSalle 125 race, because it hasn't been on TV in America yet, but you plan on watching it, you might want to turn off the podcast. This will be the last segment, as usual. Whenever I do a spoiler for a race that hasn't been broadcast or whatever, I try to make sure that it's the last thing. So if you haven't watched it yet and you're going to watch it and you're saving yourself for it and all that, goodbye. Okay, hopefully we didn't lose anybody. But I hate spoilers so much, and I know that some people don't watch the races on time, you know, right away on MotoGP.com, what have you, so I'll continue to do that sort of thing all the time, even though I probably spoiled the World Championship for some people a little while earlier in the show. Sorry about that. Oh, well. First of all, for the listeners there that might not be familiar with team orders, basically it's the team telling one rider to let the other guy win. Generally, but this is going to happen because one rider is further ahead in the championship, something like that, or the team is concentrating on the constructors, or more likely the team championship, that sort of thing. Team orders are fairly commonplace in the World Rally Championship. You hear about it all the time. They're specifically banned in Formula One, which is a joke, haha. But in MotoGP, they're kind of a rarity recently, at least that we see and know about. Off the top of my head, I don't really remember any recent races that had obvious team orders, and the FIM regulations make no mention of them either way, so they're not specifically prohibited, but they're pretty much definitely not encouraged either. To talk more about this, we need a little background. So let's do a real quick race report for the 125cc race in Qatar last week. Now, this is just pulled from a couple press releases from MotoGP, and it's not quite up to the usual standard of my full-on race reports that I do myself, but just please bear with me. The Marlboro Grand Prix of Qatar saw Gabor Talmaxi winning in a controversial photo finish ahead of his Red Bull KTM teammate and title contender Mika Kallio. Kallio had led every lap of the way after grabbing the hole shot from pole position, but was surprised when in the final 10 meters of the race, Talmaxi pulled out of his slipstream and snatched victory. Talmaxi's third of the season, excuse me. The two KTM riders had built up a steady gap over the chasing pack and blazed to the flag unchallenged. Kallio looked set for victory until Talmaxi made his race-winning move to beat the Finn by just 17 thousandths of a second. Further down the order, Marco Simoncelli was able to pull away from the chasing pack and then rode a lonely race in third to clinch his fifth podium of the year, almost 10 seconds behind the two KTM riders. Behind the Italian, there was a tough battle for fourth, which was eventually won by Mike Di Meglio, who finished ahead of Hector Fabel and Thomas Luthi. By taking sixth, Luthi conceded the championship lead to Kallio by just 2 points. Manuel Poggioli was seventh, ahead of Julian Simon, while Italians Mattia Pessini and Fabrizio Lai completed the top 10. With Kallio locked in a very close battle for the world championship with Thomas Luthi, the KTM team had decided before the race that Kallio would have the support of teammates Talmaxi and Julian Simon to help boost his bid for the title. Kallio had qualified on pole position and dominated the race, with Talmaxi cruising along behind in his slipstream for all 18 laps, apart from that last final 10 meters. On the final lap, Kallio understood that Talmaxi would stay behind and did not force the pace and risk a crash, but was left shocked by the Hungarian's maneuver. Team Red Bull KTM managing director Harold Bartol commented, "I am not happy at all. This was not a very clever move by Gabor. This could cost us dearly in the championship at the end of the season. Before the race, I spoke to Gabor and Julian and made it clear that if they were in front with Mika, then they had to race to support Mika in the championship. But this did not happen from Gabor." Talmaxi's unexpected victory cost Kallio 5 crucial championship points, and Kallio was fuming with his teammate. Kallio, who now leads Luthi by just 2 points, with Talmaxi a further 45 points behind in third place, said, "I'm very angry. This was a stupid move by Gabor. On the last lap, I knew Gabor was behind me, as he had been all race, but I did not push because I knew that he should come second and that he would take no risks to crash. But then, the 10 meters from the flag, he passed me. This has cost me 5 points in the championship. Now I just have to think about the future and what is possible over the final 3 races. Talmaxi also gave his point of view, explaining that he didn't realize it was the last lap of the race. Talmaxi is quoted as saying, "The problem was, I didn't know this was the last lap. My pit board was correct, but the main board at the finish tower was wrong. I thought there was one more lap to go. I'm a racer, and I was close to the front, and I had a slipstream, and I was a little faster on the straight. And when I pulled out, the checkered flag came very fast, and I didn't realize it was the finish. During the race, my tire performance went down, and for sure, Mika had a little faster pace than me, and he still has a good chance for the title." Okay, thank you, MotoGP, for that fantastic press release. 2 press releases combined, actually. And it was a good race. It was a very good race. The field was a little bit more spread out than we're often accustomed to seeing in the 125s, and Kallio and Talmaxi were way out in front and damn near touching the whole race. Very exciting stuff. But now let's talk about this team order situation. Personally, I think that team orders are, unfortunately, a necessary evil. It's not like I like the idea, it's just that I'm being pragmatic about it. I mean, you have to realize that there's not a whole lot of other options. I mean, you can ban them, as they've done in Formula One, but how do you enforce it? How do you enforce it realistically? It's so obvious that team orders are ever-present in Formula One, and it's ridiculous that they expect us to believe that they aren't. Do team orders suck? Yes. Oh yeah, big time. Sure they do. But I have 2 points to make. First of all, these are racing teams, basically companies that are set up to win races and championships, and the riders are employees of those teams. Sometimes the team owner or manager's idea of what should happen and the rioter's idea may not be the same thing. And I mean, it's a terrible thing to ask a young racer that's out there to basically tank a race so that his teammate can win it and get the points. But maybe that's what's necessary for the overall health and well-being of the team, including that young rider's seat for the following year. Second, and probably more important, I think that the difficulties present in enforcing any kind of ban would make it impossible to police. It's just, you know, it can't be done efficiently, effectively. And that's the main reason that they don't think they should even try. So, whether or not team orders are bad or whatever, they do exist. Like I said, and the FIM regulations do not prohibit them. And if KTM boss Harold Bartel actually did give those orders to Tomaxi, it's obvious that Tomaxi either ignored them or forgot about them or really did fail to notice that it was the last lap, like he said, although I don't believe that for a second, or who knows what. So we have the situation where Tomaxi, who has won 3 races this year and is proving himself to be quite a rider, has jeopardized his seat for next year, and he's really made his whole team mad at him, and KTM, the company, upset with him, and that really sucks for him, and it's a crappy situation. But the thing that makes me mad about it, and adds to the whole difficulty of the situation, is not that Tomaxi isn't not a very good listener or anything like that, which apparently might be a problem, but that Harold Bartel was asked, point blank, asked by Nick Harris during the race, are there any team orders? And he came right out and said, no, there's none, that the only orders were to not do anything stupid. So, you know, Bartel knows that nobody, as far as the audience, wants to hear something like, oh yeah, sure, you know, we told Tomaxi he has to lose. But then, right after the race, he's throwing this rider under the bus and not backing him up at all by making these quotes in print about how, you know, I'm very unhappy with the whole situation and this and that. It's a two-way street, and I think that if a team is going to expect the kind of loyalty where a rider is, in effect, supposed to throw a race, but the team is too afraid of bad press during that race to admit that they're doing that, then they should be prepared to stand behind that rider when something goes wrong. And I see Tomaxi as the guy who's getting the shaft in this whole situation, not KTM and not Kallio. There's a discussion going on about the team orders in general, and this situation in particular, at the RideOn2.com forums, and you really should check it out and participate in it. Go to RideOn2, 2 spelled out, T-W-O, RideOn2.com, and find the forum topic in the MotoGP section. The subject is team orders, strangely enough. And I'll put a link in the show notes as usual. Or, if you don't want to go to RideOn2.com forums, send me an email with your thoughts on the whole thing. I'd really be interested in what you guys think about team orders. Are there people out there that are thinking like me that it's just inevitable, that they're an unavoidable, nasty side of racing? Or is everybody on the other camp where, you know, team orders are wrong and they need to be banned and they need to effectively police it and all this sort of thing? And if you do think that, which is fine, it's a good opinion, how are they going to police it? What are they going to do? So, I'm just curious. I'd like to hear what other people think. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thanks again for downloading it and listening to it this far, at least. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, feel free to send an email with questions, comments, criticism, whatever. The address is always MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. Easy enough to remember. And if you're going to the Australian Grand Prix next weekend at Phillip Island, consider writing up or maybe recording a short report and send it in, MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. Either a race report or just your impressions of the weekend or maybe hints and tips for people next year about how this camping spot is great or that one's terrible or whatever. Any of that kind of stuff would be really interesting. I know there's a lot of you listening there in Australia. The country has the fourth highest number of MotoGPOD listeners, so there should be someone that would like to send in a story. Our next episode will be Friday, October 14th, and we'll have a race preview for the Australian Grand Prix at Phillip Island and some other good stuff if I can drum it up. So until then, thank you very much, and I'll talk to you later. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.